Call to order the regular meeting of the Oceana Community Services District Board of Directors for Wednesday, February 22nd. Call to order, please.
Director Burnett.
Here.
Director Angelo.
Here.
Director Colwell.
Here.
Vice President Austin. President Wendt.
Here. Okay, stand for the flag salute.
Attention, pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Agenda review. Do we have any changes?
No changes. A comment letter for item number 8B has been handed out. It's available for the public, and we'll discuss it during that agenda item.
Okay. Anything from the board?
Mm-mm.
May I get a motion? Don't we have to have a motion to approve the...
No, there's no changes to the agenda.
Okay. Okay, public comment on items not on the agenda.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I'm going to again ask your board to consider taking a position on the Phillips 66 project. The appeal hearing begins on March 13th. Your neighbors, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, San Luis Obispo City, countless other agencies have taken a position on the project. Those particular communities that I mentioned are along the rails. Significant portions of their communities are in the blast zone that's identified in the EIR. Your community, should there be an accident, would be significantly impacted. You, as the district, your water, your sewer, all your infrastructure, your own CSD offices, fire department, etc., is all within the realm of possibility of being damaged by such an event. And you've missed previous opportunities at the Planning Commission, and I would like you to take this opportunity to be on record, whatever your stance is, to be on record taking a position on the project. And if you believe, like I believe, that there are possibilities for impacts to your facilities, then you need to be on record asking for some sort of mitigation. So I would again ask that you agendize this as a discussion, invite the parties. Maybe Phillips would come. I know that that's been tried before, but opposition certainly has been to your podium in public comment asking for you to take a stand. And so because the hearing is coming so quickly, you only have a very limited window in which to agendize and have that discussion. I'm asking for you to do so tonight.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I guess we can close public comment. Moving on to special presentations. District Administrator Gerhard Huebner is going to provide us a board orientation on the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District as a special presentation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, President White, directors, general manager and staff, as well as members of the audience. Thank you. It's an honor to be here again. It's been a while. And in fact, when I looked at one of the previous presentations, I think it was last summer, perhaps. Nevertheless, it's an honor to be here today. And my presentation today will really kind of be in three parts, really talking to you about some of the activities that the district is undertaking on a kind of global scale. We'll be talking about our redundancy project a bit. And then I'll be talking about reclamation and a study that we recently completed, which we hopefully will lead to some regional collaboration among Sand District, the member agencies, as well as the city of Pismo Beach. So let's get started. Just a little bit of background, of course, if you don't know where the facility is, and we're tucked way, right back here. I call it on the island, essentially you cross over. Many of you know where it is, but just kind of orientate yourself, and we have an outfall that goes out here roughly a little less than a mile. Here's an aerial shot of our facilities. Again, you can see this is our front entrance where we come in. We have a back entrance to this way. You have the airport here. As through time, you'll see, I'll describe some of our features, but this is where our admin building, our control building is, our headworks are some of our primary features in terms of primary treatment. We have a secondary biological treatment reactor, FSR is what we call it. We have our secondary clarifier, chlorine contact chamber. The final effluent is tested, and then it's sent out to our outfall, and then the picture I just showed you out to the ocean. We also share a joint outfall with Pismo. It comes in here, roughly in this area here, comes across here, joins with us, and again, out to the Pacific Ocean. So, some significant capital projects that are either underway or completed since I've been at the district. We have a grit removal project. I'm proud to announce that it is operational. It was completed in January. We did an operational test feature. It's working great. We're working on basically an anti-corrosion project at the Cherry Avenue Sewer Bridge in Aurora Grande. We're waiting for a fish and game permit. We have the regional board one. Hope to get some bids and move that project along, hopefully by summer of this year. Our mechanical bar screen, that's an improvement to our headworks. We're waiting for the equipment. We have a contractor on board. And once the equipment arrives, shortly thereafter, we hope by May to have that also operational. We have a draft report, which I will talk about in a moment. We're waiting for state board comments. And we have a number of capital projects that we're starting to plan for next fiscal year. Looking at our digester, perhaps looking at our centrifuge, looking at a couple other projects, really to make sure that our plant stays operational and into the future, meets compliance numbers. Some other significant district initiatives that we have, fiscal and contract management. So work to get all the contracts under a template. Some past contracts were not, so we fixed that. Put some fiscal tracking mechanisms in place through our budget process. And human resources, we're working on a comprehensive update to our personnel policy manual. Look for that to be rolled out in the coming weeks. We're also needing to work on our records. We have significant records that we inherited from the Wallace era, a sea train out there, looking to look first to update our record retention policy. That'll allow us hopefully to move forward with how to handle those remaining records. If you haven't seen it, we have a new website. I hope you check it out. We've gotten a fair amount of good compliments on that, so we're very proud of it. Many of you saw our fall newsletter. We hope to embark on a strategic planning effort with our board in the coming weeks. And we submitted our annual report to the regional board, and with that, we put together an executive summary. I'll have that posted hopefully this week or next week on our board. On our website, but outlines many of the things I've just told you about. You may have heard we had a spill in 2010, pretty significant. We had some litigation. We settled it last year. That included money coming back to the community, about $500,000, both in enhanced compliance projects and supplemental projects. We've sent the check that we needed to send to the state board, and the funds that we needed to send for the supplemental project to the Bay Foundation. We are working on our final submittal to the regional board on our grit project, since it's complete. And with that, we'll be able to complete our obligations under the settlement and be able to say goodbye to that ACL. So let's turn to the redundancy project. Well, you can look back as far as 2005, and perhaps even further, things have been discussed in terms of the need for a project to construct and operate additional or redundant secondary process. So when I showed you the schematics earlier, There's only one fixed biological treatment reactor on the site. It's really large, but if it fails, we don't have any ability to do secondary treatment. So it also, we can only do minimal maintenance. It's 30 years old. It runs 24/7. So we need to do something. Again, this is just a schematic of the picture. This is the secondary unit process we're talking about. We only have one of those. So this map, that's why I brought up the previous one. This map is the site map, and it's been submitted to the Coastal Commission, and I'll get to that in a moment as well. But really what we're looking for here is to build some aeration tanks, secondary process units in this area here, and another secondary clarifier over here. This is an area that essentially we have vacant land within the facility footprint. We're not looking to disturb any of the area outside. This is what we talk about the redundancy project. This is the area we're proposing to construct it. So let's talk about the design. Back in March of last year, the board approved a contract with Kennedy Jenks for phase one of the project. Includes CEQA, surveying, geotechnical, special studies. Lighter design phases are on hold until project permitting is complete. So they didn't want to spend the entire amount, $1.5 million, $1.6 million, until we had an assurance that the permitting would move forward. CEQA, back in September of last year, the board adopted a resolution and a CEQA addendum. So we updated the 2010 mitigated negative declaration. So Coastal Commission. So this is one of our biggest hurdles. And I'm going to show you a sequence of how we've engaged them. But specifically, when you see the letters, the first letters that came out last year, they were looking for more information analysis on climate change, flooding, sea level rise, biological resources. They want to see update project descriptions. They needed us to do a CEQA determination, which I just told you that we had completed. And they needed some determination from the county of San Luis Obispo. So we've been engaging them on a real-time basis. Certainly feels that way. This isn't even all of the responses, but I really kind of started from August on. They sent a letter. We sent a letter. We've put together information. Back in August, we included five significant attachments that responded to biological surveys that we had completed, sea level rise analysis, as well as flood mitigation strategies, new site photos. We also transmitted a determination from the county of San Luis Obispo. We transmitted our CEQA addendum in September. And October, you can see we received a response for them on our submittals. Moving on, October, again, cover letter. We tried to answer many of the questions that we could. Additional questions about facility design plans, project descriptions, and we needed now to include some of the past projects. It was questions of did we get permits on those, permitting. So we wanted to all encompass now. We didn't want to go back later to get this past permit or that past permit, so we included all our, to agree that we could find them, past projects. January letter was sent to Coastal Commission. We hadn't heard from them in a while. October, they said they'd seemingly had everything. And we got some good news on January 26th, where they reported to me that they're targeting their May 17th commission meeting to hear our CDP application. So that's great news. And we're hoping that that sticks. Financing, of course, can't build anything if you don't have money. So we've engaged, went up to Sacramento, talked to State Water Resource Control Board about a state revolving fund loan. We've also engaged Bartlewell Associates for assistance in preparing a financial package. And in the event that state revolving fund loan money is not available, what other options? Private, bond market, what can we do? So this is the third part of the presentation tonight. This past, really was in December, but the slide we presented at our January 4th board meeting and then subsequently at the City of Aurora Grande City Council, and I think that was January 24th, we presented the draft study. So that's what I'm going to provide you with a little bit of highlights of what that draft study contains. Stepping back a little bit, our district member agencies, which of course the Oceana CSD is one of them, sought additional options and opportunities to supply your water supply portfolios. Potential to capture wastewater discharge to the ocean. So millions of gallons of wastewater is being discharged to the ocean, not with a whole lot of beneficial use. So the idea is to treat it and deliver it back into the community for beneficial reuse. In February of 2015, we applied and later received a grant from the State Board under their Water Recycling Grant Program. We requested and submitted an application for $75,000. The total amount of study was approximately 150, 50% local match, of which both the city as well as the district split it equally 50-50. We entered a contract with Water Systems Consulting, who drafted the ultimate study and was our consultants. The original scope of the study, and I got to point this out, was really to look at an opportunity for what the satellite water recovery facility. So scalping plant, was there an opportunity, if you can't do it at the district plant, is there another place somewhere along in one of the communities to do a scalping plant within the district's collection system? Ultimately, they found that it was not feasible, it was not cost effective, and so the project was rescoped to the project that you'll see today. So, a little bit of water supply. You probably know most of this, and it'll take a little bit of context of this was prepared prior to all the rain that we received. Nevertheless, this project and any project that's built is preparing for the next drought. Of course, public works projects take anywhere from 5 to 8 years to plan, design, construct, and get operated in any event. So keep that in mind. So there's for the North City Municipal Agencies, there's a pumping allocation, seawater intrusion. So there's been pumping that's been significantly low, perhaps even the historical amount that they could pump or would pump. Storage in Lopez. Well, this was good until probably 4 weeks ago. Now it's reading, it's up to 50%. But it's not back up to 100, so put that in the context of it'll likely go down again at some point, and we'll be talking the same story. And state water project deliveries, well, they can be unreliable. They're not always certainly at the 100%. Now, that may be a little bit different on the Central Coast. You know, coming from Southern California, I can tell you, years they got 5%, 10%, you know, 40 or 50 might be a really good year. Also to keep in mind. So, if you look at the district's treatment process, current process as described earlier, with the redundancy project, is we have headworks, now we have grit removal, we have primary, we've got our fixed fill, hopefully we have that aeration tank with the redundancy project, secondary clarifiers, disinfection, and then either beneficial reuse or back out to the ocean. With a reclamation project now, you can do the additional treatment processes, microfiltration, ultrafiltration, reverse osmosis. You will have a brine component that will have to be dealt with. You'll have more disinfection and advanced oxidation. The idea then would be injection wells back to your groundwater basin and then production wells somewhere down gradient. I think I'll just move right through these. So, primary, secondary, advanced treatment. We don't have the advanced treatment component. Okay, so the study went further and started looking at various alternatives. And what they two alternatives that they laid out was on-site being, can you build a reclamation facility at the district property? Or alternatively, is there somewhere off-site, whether Grover, Rio Grande, Oceano, for a reclamation facility. Further, there are two different types when you even look at where you site the location, where you're going to distribute the water for beneficial reuse. Groundwater recharge and the hybrid really is agricultural use. Distributing to farmers if you can find farmers that will receive it. There's also a component of phasing it. BSMO's a little bit further along in terms of their, let's say, studies or willingness to proceed. We need to do redundancy. They have higher quality effluent. So that's the reason you see two phases. Phase one is to build an advanced treatment plant for BSMO's flows. Phase two would be BSMO flows with also with the districts. Hopefully it's not too confusing, but that's essentially the scheme of the alternative analysis. This is a map. This one is the on-site alternative. Let me see if the graphics work. So the idea would be once treated, we go out to the green distribution lines, and there's also production wells. This would be with the hybrid alternative, sending it out to the ag community. Again, if you could find customers that were willing to accept the water. Moving to the off-site, this would be district sending its waters, BSMO sending its wastewater to a location, at some location out there, then the water being treated, distributed, and then recaptured. And then in this alternative, you would also include the ACFO. We did a quantitative analysis summary. I mean, there's quite a few charts and graphs and tables in here, and I didn't want to overwhelm you with too many statistics, but really this is looking at the cost of acre foot, and this particular is the phase two in terms of what it would cost for acre feet. So $2,800, $2,500, $3,000. You need to take into mind funding and financing. Some of those numbers project perhaps a higher interest rate that potentially could be received with a state revolving fund loan and a private bond market. Get a better interest rate, costs come down considerably per acre foot. And the report discusses that and provides all those graphs. So let's move to really kind of the conclusion, on-site versus off-site findings. On the on-site, in the pros, obviously we have infrastructure there. You'll have we have lower capital and O&M costs. We own the property. There's no property acquisition. Some of the cons, well, we're in the coastal zone, mentioned the permitting issues, and so we have some significant regulatory constraints. And you have a bit of governance complications. BSMO is not a member agency. If you have others that are interested, ag customers, you have to figure out the governance structure, which, of course, not only how you govern and administer the water, but who receives the water. When you look at off-site alternatives, just the flip side, you have a few outside the coastal zone, perhaps reduced regulatory constraints, perhaps a clearer governance. Cons, you have to go acquire property, you have neighborhood issues, and potentially increased capital and O&M costs. Move to groundwater recharge versus hybrid. Groundwater recharge alternate really is, it's pros are some lower capital costs, better water quality. You have a clearer connection with the beneficiary. So if the water is being put in the basin, you could have the water purveyors essentially pay for that portion of the project. So the cons are cost more on O&M because, again, more treatment, better water quality, more treatment, is your higher O&M cost, and you'd also have reduced yields. Again, you're putting it in the basin, your one-to-one recovery, that's where you get the reduced yields. Hybrid, higher O&M costs, higher yields, reduced unit costs, but again, a less connection to who the clear beneficiary would be if you could find, you know, growers that would accept the water, and you also have the delivery system that would cost money. All right, so step back. That's kind of overview of the projects we're kind of looking at, some of the next steps, and perhaps you've heard about some of them and even discussed them. We're looking perhaps a joint EIR with the city of BSMO Beach. And the district, and when I say the district, it's all of us. It's the member agencies because, of course, that would be borne by the member agencies. There's discussions of letters of intent floating around. I believe you adopted something similar. Thank you. Appreciate it. Groundwater model. Phase one, city is undertaken. We're looking to supplement that with some of the supplemental money that we got out of the settlement. And then there's ongoing discussions with the city and the stakeholders about the offsite. So before you can move to the EIR, you really need to take your conceptual offsite and kind of whittle it down to specific parcels or properties. Now, I'm not going to go through this. I've decided to put this up here because it came up at the Oro Grande City Council meeting. But beyond that, there's test wells. The model will continue in terms of refinement and additional information. There'll be some water quality sampling. Ultimately, before you can get a permit to inject the water, you're going to have to get a permit from the regional board. You're going to have to do an anti-degradation analysis, salt nutrient management plan, perhaps. So there's a number of things that will take place in the intervening period when you do them, even when you do the environmental review, the permitting, and financing to design and construction. And this is kind of a nice schematic. I decided to throw this up here. So right now things are kind of working in parallel. The idea at some point is, if possible, to join the projects and work together for ultimately a regional groundwater sustainability project. So, conclude, a lot of people worked. This is specifically on the study, and I want to acknowledge, of course, your district board and your staff that assisted with helping us get it complete. So thank you very much. And with that, I think I'm ready to answer any questions. Hopefully not too quickly, the presentation today.
Jim?
I don't have one right now.
Andrew?
A couple of questions. One would be, and this came up, I think, at one of our meetings, and very happy to have you come and give your presentation about what's going on at the district. Are there thoughts with looking at recycled water? The redundancy project is, you know, as you said, in 2005, it was identified as something that was of need. That with a potential move off-site for the water recycle facility, that potential there could be a moving of the actual waste treatment plant itself onto that same land? Is that something that's kind of in the EIR or in thoughts in the future? Not right away, but, you know, down the line.
Well, there may be somewhere 2050, 2070 where that may need to occur. Coastal Commission is identified that they perhaps would like us to look at that. But I would say for current, we feel that the current facilities where they're at are properly sited and can operate with any sea level rise, any climate change, any flooding for the foreseeable future. And I put this also in light of when you construct public works, they generally have a life cycle of 30 years. So even if we were to install it and you look 30 years out, we're still within the level of analysis that our flood analysis looked at in terms of the time frame. So build it today, 30 years out, we're 2050. That may be the time where you want to look outside. We did do a rough alternative analysis to evaluate what the cost and what that would be, and it's enormous. I mean, it would probably triple or quadruple your rates to actually pick up the plant. The difference with primary and secondary treatment plant versus tertiary is reverse osmosis units. If you look at some of the facilities that have been built, I've seen some at City of Oxnard has them. They're skids. They can be relocated. They're almost like off the shelf. You can design a tertiary addition or reclamation plant that might be able to be moved somewhere else. An aeration basin is not something you can pick up and move. You would have to wholesale start over. That's significant cost to your ratepayers.
I think it's the thought, too, the new redundancy project, when that's done, would that end up becoming the primary working unit, and then the old unit would become kind of the secondary? Is that what would end up happening?
That's my understanding. We're not going to eliminate that that fixed film
right.
reactor
right.
that would continue either as a backup or would continue to handle some of the waste that we receive, the wastewater we receive.
And with the upgrades or, you know, sort of maintenance that would need to be done to that unit once the new redundancy project is finished, do you know what sort of life, you know, expectancy increase that would be to that unit? Has that been?
Well, certainly. Once we could rehabilitate it,
right.
that unit in itself, if we need to replace the media, for example, or rehabilitate the media or some of the mechanical arms, of course, now you're going to extend the life of the unit as long as the structural portion of it is still sound. The innards can last another 10 years or more,
okay.
depending
okay.
on the maintenance.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
How long do you think we'll ever get this started, really started and completed?
Well, cross your fingers, and if we can get past coastal permitting, let's say by the May meeting, then we can proceed to design. We would then issue to our design consultants, Kennedy Jenks, a notice to proceed to design. My understanding that would be completed in 10 to 12 months. From there, we would go to bid and award of contract. So maybe by end of 2018, we could have construction underway, optimistically.
Very much optimistically.
Well, I'm an optimist.
In before I saw tonight's presentation, they keep talking about water reclamation and the redundancy project. You shouldn't do one, you should do two. I don't see much of a nexus between the redundancy project, which needs to be done now to keep the plant running, mm-hmm. and the other project, which down the lane, I mean, they really aren't in any way the same projects. And I thought at one point, in my mind, I thought, well, gee, we should do the reclamation and we don't need to do the redundancy, but I don't, there is no, I see no nexus.
Well, you need the redundancy just as for the basic premise that to continue to operate the plant as a current on the current permit, and you need to do it.
Yeah.
It will, and on the benefits, it will produce higher quality effluent, which will stage you for any reclamation. Currently,
okay.
the water we produce now, we cannot distribute, for example, even for simple landscaping, parks, schools, which many secondary treatment plants can do.
Like Santa Luis does.
Yes.
Purple pipe water.
Yes. And what I didn't put up there are various types of tertiary water, reclaimed water, from the very basic landscaping, you know, put out on golf courses, to when you get human contact, you got to have higher quality. You get the purple pipe, of course, is, you're exactly right. It's for reclaimed mm-hmm. water.
Yeah.
So the higher the uses, the higher the quality has to be.
Yeah. Okay.
President White, on your question regarding sort of the relationship between a redundancy project and a tertiary project, some of the general discussion that has occurred in these chambers over the last couple of years is the question about whether a technology is out there that could basically do both. And so MBR is membrane bioreactors. There are some technologies out there. The issue, though, is that PISMO already has secondary treated water. And so part of what the sanitation district is looking is to try to match up the qualities of the water so that then the facilities that's going to provide that extra tertiary treatment are the most cost-effective facilities, because even though alternative technologies exist, they're definitely more expensive. And then if they're not needed for PISMO flows, so we have a complicated overall set of criteria. And right now the strategy is to try to have the sanitation district flows upgraded or at least consistent with the PISMO flows so that the same quality goes into a tertiary treatment plant.
Yeah. It's all making more sense to me every minute I hear more. Yeah.
And, you know, technologies are chosen for cost as well as operational and maintenance reasons.
Yeah.
So depending on your purpose and your goal, you pick a certain technology at the point of time that you have the best information to pursue that certain technology.
And
it applies to wastewater, too. So.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, and what we see today, now certainly the redundancy needs to move ahead, and it's moving ahead. But as far as reclaimed water, maybe 5 years from now, when it really gets to the point where there's enough funding and enough studies and everybody's talking together and everything's going, at that point, we may be looking at something completely different than we're talking about now. I mean, it's a possibility, in theory.
Yes, anything's possible.
Thank you.
I think the only thing I want to add, too, is because I agree, is with the redundancy project, I'm glad that that can move forward. Even in working in technology like I do, you have to have redundancy when it comes to servers, because if something goes down, and when it comes to, like, banking core or something, we're all, you know, our banking's not going to work. Same thing with this, and this is health and safety that needs to have redundancy to it. I think when it comes to the recycled water reclamation part, I know I've heard with at some of the meetings, public comment, as well as even organizationally, like Surf Riders Foundation. I'll be really interested to see the offsite potential for that, because in the level that the wastewater treatment plant's at now, and the risks that are associated, it would seem, again, looking decades down the line, that finding an area that the recycled water can be put now, and then a new plant way later on down the road can also be housed, I think would be, when it comes to our dollars, very efficient. So I'll be interested to see what comes up with that. So.
Thank you. Anything else? Do we have public comment on this?
It's your discretion.
Public comment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Julie Tacker, and I'm one of those people who thinks you should fund redundancy offsite and fund a recycled water facility offsite. And the reason I say that is, number one, Oceano's been the host of the plant its entire life, nearly 50 years. And it's time that maybe someone else shared the burden. I think you should look at the alternatives analysis that the district did perform. I think the idea that the redundancy project is going to the Coastal Commission in May, while that may be most expedient, I don't know that that's the most friendly for you. It's in San Diego. Just a few months later, in September, the Coastal Commission is meeting in Cambria. So it seems to me that you would ask that you have it closer so that you can support your project if that's indeed your position on it. The recycled water on-site solution actually interests me, because I don't know how you could shoehorn in any more facilities on the site, and that you would put those facilities at risk, even with the analysis that the consultants have done for sea level rise, tsunami run up, those things. The message from the Coastal Commission is to move inland. And when I look at the recycled project, when Mr. Huebner showed you even the transmission lines coming across Highway 1 and injection locations on that side of the highway, you are in sensitive habitat areas. You're in one of the sites that's identified in the plan is even on airport property, and I know you guys know how hard it is to do anything on their property. You have to have FAA approval, you know, those kinds of things. It just seems to me that you would take the path of least resistance, and that would be away from the sensitive areas and away from where it is right now. So I, as you know, I follow that district and your district closely, and I'll be very interested to see what the outcome is as it unfolds. But I think I like that you are interested in Mr. Huebner's presentation today, and I hope you stay engaged because it is, it's your backyard, it's your front yard. So, thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you again. Excellent, excellent, excellent.
We're looking for support when we get to the Coastal Commission.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to staff reports. Tony Marciano, field supervisor. We had a good week.
Good evening, board. Tony Marciano. Yes, we did. Just want to give you an update on Lopez. It's currently at 53.8% full, which is 26,548 acre feet. All right, so we've had samples, six work orders, four USAs, 11 customer service calls, continuing to locate cleanouts. We're over one-third done on our in Oceano. A lot of preventive maintenance and maintenance of our equipment and tools due to the fact it was raining quite a bit, so it was a nice relief to take care of our equipment for once and spend a little bit of time with our gear and equipment and go through it and make sure everything's working properly. We had an APCD inspection. Normally, the past 2 years, they've came to our facility, but due to the fact that our record keeping has been really well with the APCD, they did not visit our site. We basically emailed everything to them. They're going to do once every 3 years now because the previous 2 years have been in order and well-kept record keeping for them. So that's nice to hear from them. We had some dead-end flushing. Also, we prepared for a sanitary survey. That's through the State Water Resource Control Board Division of Drinking Water. Last week, they gave us a notification approximately Wednesday that they were going to do a site visit for that sanitary survey, and they showed up Tuesday, and it actually went really well. It was the first one that I've had here since I've been here. They check record keeping from samples to lead and copper samples to ensure the consumer is, you know, all our reports and everything, that they understand how to take the samples. There was a discrepancy, and that was with our lab. Our lab did not submit the lead and copper samples to them, but we did have all the record keeping on site, so we could show them and then email it over to them. So they got copies of it. I will be checking with the lab and find out where the disconnect was. They climbed both of our tanks. They checked any points of entry for contamination at our facility for distribution and treatment. He was really thorough. It was a good experience. You know, our water permit's going to get updated and corrected due to the fact that we have, you know, decommissioned well 5. There's a few other things that need to be updated. And they went really well, and he will have a written report. And as soon as I get that, I'll go over that with you. Any questions?
Sounds like you're doing a good job.
Yeah, it went really well. It was good talking to him after the inspection. And the one thing he did say, we do have a little bit of rust on top of the tanks. And I was aware of that, and we'll go up there and kind of clean it up and, you know, primer it and paint over it. Unless it's a little too thin, we can, we've had the tanks rewelded at times in previous years. So we'll, it's not a big concern, but he wanted to let us know he's aware, you know, make us aware of it, and we are.
I had one question, and I think I had it right. APCD?
Air Pollution Control District. Oh, okay. I'm glad you asked when I throw out these acronyms at you.
Oh, thank you.
I don't always go over them. I'm so used to the acronyms.
That's our diesel engines, isn't it?
So Air Pollution Control District for San Luis, they take care of any engines, yes, Tier 0, Tier 1, everything that runs. All our emergency generators, our air compressor, emergency generator, the Vactor is part of that. And all that requires record keeping and hour logs, fuel logs, to that effect. Yes.
Perfect. Tony, you had mentioned to me in the recent past also the requirement that we're going to have to dive the tanks pretty soon.
Yes, yeah, so if you remember back in 2012, we had the tanks dived and vacuumed and videoed. That was 5 years ago.
Really?
And, yes, time has flown by. So we're coming up on that fifth year, and that's something we're going to have to look at and get an estimate. It's definitely a good thing to get the settlement out, get it videoed, and ensure the coating on the inside of the tanks are, you know, well, it's well intact. We do have cathodic protection. It does definitely help. But that's coming up, 2017. 5 years has gone by pretty quick. So yeah. Just giving you a heads up.
What kind of protection did you say?
Cathodic protection.
Okay.
You have to, I know you've been out to the yard before. Yeah. I'll have to show that to you if you ever get a little bit of time. Climb the top of the tank, maybe, if we can get, if it's authorized. But it's anodes. It's bolted to the top of the tank. It's electricity, and it keeps it from rusting.
Okay.
But the coating really is what protects from the rust. Gotcha. The cathodic protection definitely helps, but it's the coating that does the work.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't see Fire Chief Lieberman here, so I will give a fire report with my reports. Our general manager.
Okay, Madam President, just a quick comment relating to the recent storms, because most of my other efforts are on the agenda. We've gotten a number of calls from residents and property owners within Oceano when there's downed trees and everything. And so just for individuals who may be listening tonight, again, when it comes to those, it's County Public Works at 781-5252 that responds to trees and other types of storm damage. I have been in communication with County OAS, though. They are sending out to all the local agencies requests for damages associated with the storms as part of their development of a local proclamation. And the good news so far is that we haven't incurred any damages for OCSD facilities. So I just wanted to make quick mention of that.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay, and I don't see anybody from the Sheriff's Office, so we'll move on to Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. Director Angelo, you're first on the...
I'm always first on that.
It's because you start with an A.
I haven't gone to anything this last month, actually. There hasn't been a whole lot to go see and do, so...
Okay. Vice President Austin is not here. Director Bernay?
And since the last meeting, there have been no committees that I've attended, so nothing to report.
Director Coldwell?
Last Friday, I attended a subcommittee meeting within the Water Resources Advisory Committee, and the... Advisory Committee reports to the County Board of Supervisors, and primarily we're reviewing a preliminary report from the county concerning water resources. And the subcommittee is a volunteer committee. There were nine of us present, two employees of the county, and then seven of us representing different areas within the county, and of course myself on behalf of Oceano. I won't go into extensive detail because we're going to be doing that a little bit later on in our meeting here tonight. However, it seems that of the seven of us present at the subcommittee meeting, the primary theme of those, all seven, is that the county figures concerning water resources and water usage was drastically underreported. That is, the county report, preliminary report that we're reviewing at this point is showing that the water resources are greater than what's being used for the most part, and those figures may not be right. Jim Gehring, an engineer, very clearly pointed out that we're at serious risk of potential seawater intrusion at this point because the water usage is exceeding the resources available. And like I said, we'll be going into this in much greater detail shortly tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. I went to two meetings. The regular meeting of the Five Cities Fire Authority started at 10 a.m. on last Friday, which was a rather eventful day for us with that huge storm hitting. And we did mostly routine stuff, and we were on a discussion of how we could possibly do some fee recovery on some of the services we provide. When Fire Chief Steve Lieberman got a cell phone call and raised his hand to interrupt us and said, we have to end this meeting because I have to go to the Rio Grande Police Department to open an Office of Emergency Services Center right now. So the meeting was rapidly adjourned, and we all fought our way through the storm to our cars and going home. All I saw was broken trees down Farrell. I knew not to go down Pike, which, had I known, was already blocked by massive eucalyptus trees. But so that was that meeting. And then Tuesday afternoon, I attended a Zone 11A. That's the flood control Zone 1A for the lower, flood control for the lower part of the Rio Grande Creek. And Rich Ross, who is with the county, gave a pretty good report. He said that right now what he is doing is keeping the Rio Grande Creek channel open and flowing. They take down what's gone down and what's going to fall because there's massive, because of the winds and the heavy winds along the creek channel in the Zone 1A area, which is from where Los Bears comes in around to Oceano. There's been many, many, many willow trees that are part of the preserved canopy for the steelhead and keeping shade on the creek that have just torn and ripped apart, and so they're trying to get them out. They can't go into the water for various reasons. But it's been, they're just, as he said, his goal is to keep the water moving. So that was his report. It was kind of interesting. And then we also had a report on the long-delayed waterway management program that would clean out the channel. And it's been the NOAA and NIMS, that's the National Oceanic Administration, and the National Fisheries Group have both blocked the project for moving, and they're working on amending it, and there's going to be, it's tomorrow. The county staff is meeting with those people on site at the creek tomorrow in efforts to get that project moving so that the silt of the creek channel can be moved. And they're working very, very hard, but it's been a multi-year project. The funding is there. The planning is there. The county is doing due diligence to try and get it done, but they just can't get the permits from all the governmental entities. And that's my report. And I suppose public comment on special presentations and reports. Seeing nobody come, we move on to the consent agenda. What's our pleasure?
Public comment on the consent agenda, if
public
any.
Public comment on the consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda items.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0. Do we want public comment first on the business items or after each one?
I would recommend comment after each one, okay. Mostly because of item 8B. Which
yes.
I think is, I provided that a letter and provided it for the public as well. So that's something that was not included in the original materials. And
okay.
So having separate public comment on the different items would be my recommendation.
Okay. Business item 8A, consideration of recommendation to approve an agreement with the County of San Luis Obispo for the public facilities fees related to firefighting and emergency response services.
President White, members of the board, item 8A regarding our public facilities fee has specific recommendation tonight to approve the agreement with the County of San Luis Obispo and to authorize the president to execute it in its final form. And that second part of the recommendation simply recognizes that in the final approval with the county, there's always the chance that there could be some non-substantive edits. The specific timing of the approval by the county is a little bit uncertain. There is four agencies like Oceano who obtain public facilities fees from the county. They've received one agreement back. If your board approves tonight, then they'll be informed that, you know, we're the second agency that's approved it. They want to get the approvals of all four agencies prior to bringing it to the Board of Supervisors. So again, there's a chance that maybe agency number three or agency number four has some minor edits. And so we have made this recommendation so that we have the flexibility subject to legal counsel's review of making some minor modifications.
Okay.
Overall, this is really a type of an agreement that should have been put forward many, many years ago because there's shared responsibilities associated with these public facilities fees. The County of San Luis Obispo staff report indicates is what early 1991 had at first developed the public facilities financing plan. And they've updated it as late as July of 2011. The idea is that they establish public facilities fees by looking at data overall from multiple unincorporated communities like Oceano, and they have taken on the responsibility of establishing the dollar amount of the fees. The agreement then obligates the district for three specific areas, and so it amounts to a shared responsibility. One is we'll have to come back with a resolution to identify the purpose and the specific eligible uses. Now, those eligible uses are already identified in the county's financing plan. It's the station remodel, upgrade, completion of the station, with the primary purpose there, the permanent living spaces associated with the firefighters. They still are utilizing temporary. The financing plan adopted by the county also anticipated an additional fire engine
and another fire apparatus, which isn't defined, but basically has the cost range of being like a chief's vehicle. And then it also speaks to equipment overall. And in addressing the issue of the emergency generator, that's really part of the incomplete equipment associated with the firehouse, fire station. And the important thing to recognize there is the old emergency generator that no longer operates did not meet the NFPA standards, which is the National Fire Protection Association standards. So even though it was a previous generator, the idea that the new generator is not a replacement of the old generator, it's one that would then meet the NFPA standards. So it's part of the incomplete. Again, the facilities we're talking about are the completion of the station, primarily looking at permanent living, a fire engine, another apparatus, and then associated equipment. So the resolution has to identify what are we going to use them for, and basically we have to be able to make the findings, your board has to make the findings, that our needs are consistent with what the county has actually incorporated into the public facilities plan. Since OCSD has been providing that input to the county for years and years and years, the ability to make that purpose and eligible use determination seems pretty reasonable. The second issue is establishing the reasonable relationship between new development and the capital improvements. And that's going to require a little bit more work, because what's important is that the new development only has to pay for their proportional share of costs that are necessary because of that new development. And the code provides some flexibility with regard to levels of service and even some refurbishment. I mentioned those in the staff report, and after working on it earlier in the week, this week, I don't think that those issues are really going to come to play in the findings that your board needs to make, and I'll get to that in a minute. But the point here is the reasonable relationship between new development and the capital improvements is, out of the estimated cost of the capital improvements, what is the proportional share that new development should really have to pay? And so we have to go into county planning records, look at what's their estimate of build-out for the community, where do we stand right now, how much new development is going to occur in comparison to the existing development, and we even want to go back in time a little bit from when we started collecting the public facilities fees. So that's getting into a little bit of the county's projections on build-out and current populations in order to, and that's the proportionality issue, the relationship between new development and capital projects. How much is new, what proportion of the capital projects is it that new development should have to pay? The third component then is the funding commitment, and that is the one that is extremely important. Because out of the facilities that need to be constructed and developed, only a portion of those costs are really going to be allocable to new development. There's a portion of the costs that existing development should have to pay as well. Now, I don't know what those percentages are right now. It could be 90%, 10%, it could be 50%, 50%. That's some of the work that needs to be done. But in any case, we know that there's going to be a local share of costs. And so in developing this, we have to put forward a plan, and we have to be able to identify dates as to which we think we're going to get to the different capital improvements, with the largest and the most costly one being the modifications to the fire station for the permanent living spaces. And so where are we going to get that local money from, and when is that going to be available, and how certain are we that we're going to have that local funding? The key issue here is that in 2022, we're going to have all the interfund loans for the sheriff's building paid off. And so we're going to have an unencumbered asset at that point in time. And the existing lease agreement with the County of San Luis Obispo provides the sheriff's office with the ability to renew that for five-year terms. When we get to that point in time, and in the existing lease agreement, there's a formula for modifying the monthly rent. So right now, the county pays us monthly rent of, I think it's $9,495 a month. In the renewal, then that number would change based on a formula. Or we can negotiate an entirely new lease. The certainly in some of the town hall meetings, Sheriff Parkinson has indicated that even with the pursuit of a Napomo substation, he expects to stay in Oceano. And so I think that we've got a good tenant there, and hopefully we'll continue with that lease. But the point being is that lease revenues after 2022 then will be the source of revenues that we can use in order to incur some debt in order to finish off the fire station. It's all captured right now in our facilities fund. Within the last couple of years, we made sure to establish the facilities fund for this and other reasons. Well, how much then are the projections that we might be able to use a lease revenue type of a financing in order to develop capital funding for the fire station? And I've run some numbers. They're not very difficult to run. And it's anywhere between like $1.25 million and $1.75 million. So it's far in excess of what we're going to need in order to complete the fire station. And so I anticipate, after working through some of the other legal issues with general counsel, as well as getting into the planning department records and doing some of those other calculations, that we can put forward a resolution with all the findings and dates associated with completing the fire station that are completely within reason and well justified. The worst case scenario is that the sheriff chooses not to renew the lease. The best case scenario is that we negotiate a new lease with him so it doesn't have a 5-year term, but instead has a new 20-year term. Obviously, all the lease revenues won't be able to be dedicated for new capital financing because some of the lease revenues needs to be preserved for the landlord's costs associated with the facilities. We did tenting for termites this last year. The year before, we replaced one of the air conditioner units. So, you know, we're going to continue to have ongoing landlord-related costs. And I subtracted out a rough estimate of those and coming up with the 1.2 to 1.75 million available. My last comment on that is that on the facilities itself, 2022 could come around and the district board of directors might think, gosh, do we want to do something other than that remodel? Maybe we want to build a new fire station down on the corner of 13th and Highway 1. The idea is that those are still going to be within the discretion of the board. Those are going to be a lot more costly. You know, could grant revenues be obtained? Are there other ideas? Certainly. The key is the minimum level of capital work that needs to be done has got to equate to, you know, the finishing this fire station. So we have to be able to show that we can do it, that we've got local funding, that we've got a reasonable timeline. I think that's all well within reason. But again, it doesn't limit the board's discretion in the future to do something more. So the recommendations for the adoption of the agreement with the county is one. We'll come back with the resolution and the other findings that are necessary. Item 8C talks about the emergency generator a little bit. The basic idea is coming back with these PFF, public facilities fees, resolutions, and findings. I need to try to time that with going out to bid for the emergency generator. Okay, last comments really are, what are the alternatives to this agreement with the county? And there are some. For example, Templeton CSD, that also has fire protection emergency services, establishes their own public facilities fee. And they collect it at the time that there's new development. Because new development has to come in and get water will serve letters from us, then we would know if we developed our own public facilities fee that that would be the time that we would charge them that public facilities fee. So Oceano CSD could develop its own public facilities fees. And the third alternative is to develop a plan with Five Cities Fire Authority. And then that would be a plan that would consider Grover and Arroyo Grande as well. The three communities could very well have different fee calculations, but a public facilities plan developed through Five Cities Fire Authority would be coordinated with the other agencies and arguably best meet the needs of Five Cities Fire Authority. The Joint Powers Authority gives us still the responsibility of providing a fire station to Five Cities Fire Authority, so the current model works as well. In thinking about those different alternatives, to me, the first issue of consideration, and it won't happen now, and it takes time for these things to happen, so I still encourage your board to approve the agreement with the county for right now. But one of the questions is, does the Five Cities Fire Authority Board, are they interested in developing a public facilities PFF plan for Five Cities Fire Authority as a whole? Probably a noteworthy item to consider when we know that Five Cities Fire has some funding challenges. The idea of OCSD doing its own fee approach, it's really hard for me to judge that right now, but as I start looking at the planning department records and projections of build-out and those numbers and compare it to our cost estimates and that relationship between what should new development pay, and then I might start gaining a sense of, is the county's fee a good number, or if we develop our own plan, would that fee be different and better meet our needs? So in the coming weeks, as I'm working on those numbers, I might be able to get some general sense as to whether or not we might want to develop our own fee like Templeton does in the future. I would still consider that to be a secondary option to whether Five Cities Fire Authority wants to pursue a plan for all three communities. And that completes my comments, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
So it seems to me we need to take some action now on authorizing President White to execute the agreement. And then subsequently we can face some of these other issues. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, if we develop our own PFF fee, is that in addition to the county?
No, it would replace the county.
It would replace it. Yeah. Okay.
And in my discussions in the last week or so with the county staff member, he was like, that's easy enough. They would just stop collecting the fees that they're collecting for us. And once we adopted the new fee schedule, and we would still take the PFFs that they have collected and include those in our model, so we wouldn't be, you know, giving them any of the money back.
Is there any issue at all obtaining those funds from the county? Some of the times there can be issues there.
Yeah, no, they regularly transmit the payments to us. I think it's on a quarterly basis.
Okay.
So, yeah, there have not been any issues. The thing is the conversations have been, oh, we need to get this agreement adopted. And there's annual reporting requirements. How much did we collect? Whatever we use it for? The things that, you know, I did an overview on the resolution and those other necessary findings and everything. So that's really what the county wants to see, all four agencies help them clean up a little bit.
Good.
I just had a question as far as the public facility fee. I know for us, for firefighting and emergency response services, and with our budget, I know we would need the fees for firefighting and, you know, emergency services. If we were to take that on, or maybe it would be none of the county level anyway, I mean, could those fees technically be used for other public facilities, or is it just for firefighter emergency services?
As adopted right now, it is only for fire emergency services.
Okay.
And so even in the emergency generator, I need to do some cost allocations associated with how much is for the fire station versus how much is for our admin and the sheriff. Because the National Fire Protection Association standards really point to the need for the generator for firefighting purposes, and the fact that it needs to turn on automatically means that there's going to be a higher cost burden associated with the fire department. But I've got to do those calculations. Now, underneath a public facilities financing plan, if it was adopted by the district, that, yeah, there are other facilities that we can incorporate it into a PFF schedule.
Okay.
I don't really anticipate what those might be right now, because when it comes to water and sewer systems, we essentially do have PFFs as part of our connection fees. It's just that water and sewer systems adopt them a little bit differently than we do for general governmental services, but they all fall underneath the same basic code sections and theories of law that you can't charge new development anything more than their proportional share of facilities. But water and sewer is a little bit different because you can also charge them for buy-in to the existing facilities that essentially all the customers and property owners who are paying for the water system have an investment in that, and somebody new comes in, it's the concept of calling the buy-in fee. So they're substantially the same, little variations. Now, when we look at our other facilities, we don't have sheriff as a responsibility. We lease a building to the sheriff, but we can't say we're going to do a PFF for the sheriff because that's not our jurisdiction. Parks, we could. The county still operates county parks within, but we have parks and recreation powers, and if we thought that we wanted to do something for parks and recreation, maybe refurbish the fire station at Highway 1 and 13th Street to have it become a recreational facility, then we could look at PFFs to help pay for a portion of those costs. In that scenario, we're still going to have a lot of local costs that we would have to figure out how to pay for independent of the PFFs. And in something for recreation, that's a much more daunting challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. And I noted, too, in this agreement, it has the 60 days. So even if we were to come up with something with the joint...
Aren't there other fees collected by development, Quimby fees for parks?
Yeah, and so, you know, these are generally characterized as Quimby fees. The county does collect, and a portion of the fees that they even collect in Oceano is for other purposes as well. I didn't look at the details of it. What is interesting is that there's a little bit of a scuttle going on around now, or I'm picking up news of it, because I don't think Napomo is very happy. Napomo has been contributing a lot to public facilities fees. The money has been spent in other portions of the county, and I understand Napomo is making some overtures that, well, when are you going to start spending public facilities fees in Napomo? I mention that because within the overall umbrella of a plan, yes, the county is collecting public facilities fees on a countywide basis. They can spend the cash that they have in one community, but they're going to have to get back and also work on Napomo at some point in time. Similar, you're going to be looking at findings where we say, look, we're going to allocate the PFFs to pay for the generator, but we have to also make sure that portion that's not attributable to fire is going to get repaid. And so it happens when we complete the remodel of the fire station. But in any case, that analogy of what Napomo was talking about, and how are the Quimby and PFF fees being collected on a countywide basis, and how much is going to Napomo or how much has not been going to Napomo, is an analogy to how we have to evaluate the generator project versus fire engines. And so that's a bit of a complication, but again, that will be part of future considerations by your board.
Well, we can get this done. We're moving forward.
Yes.
Any other public comment?
Julie Tacker and I encourage your board to enter into the agreement. But I'm going to take this opportunity to wave my magic wand. And as far as the building at Highway 1 and 13th Street, it's a prominent corner. It's part of the revitalization plan, and you own it. And I would like to see your CSD offices there. That would be your city hall. Again, this is my magic wand. As I understood, this building was to be fire living space. My understanding is when you come in the front door, that was the living room. or some living area. I may be wrong. But that the offices, Pavo's office, your little offices were bedrooms. You have bathrooms with showers already. Did you ever wonder why there were showers in there? And that at one time there were cots even in here, and that there was living in this building. So I don't know what the remodel looks like, but maybe you do look at how reconfiguring this space, this building, to be their living quarters, and that you move. And like I said, I think ideally City Hall would be on that prominent corner, all dolled up and pretty, and that's where you go when you pay your water bill. People don't have to come to the fire station very often. So maybe the original idea behind the CSD and the plans for this building might have been optimal at that time and maybe need revisiting. But I think, you know, with the revitalization, that's your shining point right there. That building is wonderful. It has great potential and could really be an asset. So just my magic wand.
That is part of what will be an interesting discussion in years to come, because I agree completely that 13th Street and Highway 1 corner is that making improvements on that corner, and then, you know, all the way up from that corner to here, the district owns all the property, the sheriff's station, this particular building. We do have I did find some of the architectural drawings to provide the living space and for permanent housing. So when we come back, I'll bring those drawings as well. I think that it will be an interesting discussion in the years to come of how we might work something at that corner, enhance that corner. Part of it is going to hinge on what kind of financing can we really obtain. Certainly it's within the realm of possibility that a 20-year lease with the county, that they might also help with the financing, the capital financing of whatever's done in the future. The little vision that I had, which will maybe be on the table in future years, maybe not, was a new fire station with some glass bays so that we can showcase the two antique fire engines that we have. One is Grover's and one is Oceano's. Repurposing the fire bays here to help with cleaning RVs and attracting a little bit more of the visitor tourism off the dunes and getting them to come to Oceano rather than Pismo. Of course, that's a vision that has a lot of stuff, improvements along Highway 1 as well, and things that are more visitor-touring. So it's going to provide a really good opportunity around the year 2020 for the community to start talking about what's the vision of, you know, this sort of the government row, if you will, and with the depot across the street. I think it's going to be a really good opportunity to enhance this part of town. And there's going to be a lot of good different options that are discussed.
I'm curious. I don't want to get off topic to what this is, but regarding that discussion, the public facilities fees, does that all apply, everything we were talking about with that, or is it a little bit more?
It does apply.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Just curious.
The key with the plan that we're going to be bringing back to your board in the near future is that whatever you do in the future, it's got to be at least that or better.
Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, it starts to erode the findings associated with the PFFs. Yeah.
Entertain a motion.
I'd make a motion that the board authorize our president and council to make the necessary changes, if any, and execute the agreement with the county.
Pardon me? So that might capture it. As a matter of protocol, sometimes it's easier if you concur with staff recommendations, just to make the recommendation to approve staff recommendations.
Okay.
I work a little bit closely with legal counsel to make sure those words are right. Because we have an agreement, I'm a little bit more sensitive in this situation. In other situations, not as sensitive. So
That would be, well, we can first see to see if there's a second. Without a second, we can try again.
Oh, did, without a second, let me please make a motion that this honorable board move to approve the staff recommendations authorizing our president and council enter into the agreement on with the county concerning the public funding fees.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We need a roll call vote on this. Please, Madam Secretary.
Director Colwell?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Bernay?
Yes.
President White?
Yes. Thank you. It passes 4-0. Okay, let's move on to 8B. Review of the San Luis Obispo County 2014-2016 Resource Summary Report Public Review Draft and approve providing comments to the Water Resource Advisory Committee and the County Board of Supervisors.
Madam President, members of the board, so I have a slightly revised recommendation. Had the opportunity to work with Mr. Gehring and of the RAC subcommittee, and have provided a comment letter to all the board members and also distributed it simultaneously for the public here. And to paraphrase what I'm proposing here is that the RAC subcommittee, as Director Colwell had identified a lot of disparity between the amounts and the figures that are in the county's resource summary report versus other documents that have been developed. And those other documents, especially pertaining to the Napomo Mesa, are the annual report of the Napomo Mesa management area that they prepare and submit to the courts every year. But in addition to sort of technical disparities and the fact that those need to be worked on, there's a bigger issue that's going on. And to me, that bigger issue is the fact that even though there was a 2004 resource capacity study and 2005 stipulations, we're finding ourselves in the last couple years with increased activity in the litigation and the protest front. So we know that the cities in NCMA filed motions in, I think it was 2015, against Mesa entities and the county seeking enforcement of the stipulations. And currently we conduct case management conferences and the managers get together and the technical experts are getting together and try to develop some better concurrence on what to do. And then I identified in the attachment B to the letter the recent dispute that has surfaced at the Public Utilities Commission, where Golden State Water was essentially going to the Golden State Water is a public entity, and so they're regulated by the California Public Utilities Commission. And they have to go to the PUC in order to establish rates and other conditions, just like OCSD staff will come to your board in order to seek approval of certain recommendations. And what Golden State Water was seeking in November was the condition that any new development was going to essentially have to identify and bring in their own water. The county protested that, citing essentially inconsistencies or making the statement that that wasn't fully in accord with the stipulations. Golden State responded. Napomo responded in support of Golden State Water. The county objected further, and that's where it stands right now. The verbal discussion I've had with representatives on the Mesa is that they believe that the PUC is going to go with Golden State Water's position, but that has yet to be decided. The important point here is that we're seeing motions, which cost a lot of money because we get attorneys involved a lot, and then we've got protests at the PUC. And what is abundantly clear to me, at least, is that when the county's 2004 resource capacity study was prepared, and then it goes through the county process, and the Board of Supervisors took action in 2006, that overlapped the 2005 stipulations of the court and the 2008 judgment by the court. And it's important to recognize that those were independent processes. That, you know, they might have, people were looking maybe a little bit at what each other was doing. But we would not have the level of issues surfacing today if those two efforts were reconciled and brought into harmony with each other. So the basic statement of position that we have here is that it's been over a decade. I recommend that your board recommends to the Board of Supervisors that the 2004 resource capacity study be updated. And the basic benefits of it are, well, the important benefits of it are that the data differences that really Jim Gehring, and he's District 4 Supervisor Compton's appointee to the Water Resource Advisory Committee, that those technical details really need to be reconciled. And to go, the resource summary report is just that. It's just a summary report. And it's through that more detailed effort of a resource capacity study that those details will be ironed out or reconciled or evaluated. And then secondly, it's through the resource capacity study that the Board of Supervisors looks at a situation, and whether it's water or roads or whatever, and then makes the determinations on what kind of land use policy do they need to adopt considering a resource constraint. And so it could be at the end of the day the county says, hey, all of their land use policies are good, and it's really the purveyors and everybody who's involved in the adjudication needs to go back to the judge and modify their stipulations. That's within the realm of possibility, but we only get there if the county updates their resource capacity study and if they get in front of the Board of Supervisors and starts talking about this particular issue in detail. And certainly the Napomo Mesa, I think, warrants that level of detail review. The county has, for several years now, been spending a lot of energy and time on the Paso Robles Basin, understandably so. But, again, it's been more than a decade, and I think that it's all the evidence is there. We've got data that doesn't match up, and we've got motions that are being filed in the courts and disputes that are being, discussed at the Public Utilities Commission. And the most direct path to really evaluate the situation is for the county to update their 2004 resource capacity study.
What concerns me about that is, how long does it take the county to update that report? That's months at least, isn't it?
Oh, yes, at least month. And, like any other organization, their staff has, got tasked with certain things. So just being able to initiate the effort is going to take them a little bit of time. When we talk about groundwater adjudications, we talk about, water resource management, we generally measure things in years, if not longer. So, yes, timeliness is a concern. I think the biggest issue right now is to try to get the county to commit to doing so. And so we've structured the letter to the Water Resource Advisory Committee in this fashion. And then depending on how it plays out with the planning department, we might also recommend that this letter or a modification to it be transmitted to the Board of Supervisors at such time that they're considering the 2014-16 resource summary report. Yeah.
I certainly agree that we want to submit our position letter. I think that's a valuable thing.
Yeah, I would certainly support this action. And I find it just kind of sad that this kind of thing even happens. If somebody would sit down with all the documentation, they could get everything in line.
I think
maybe,
that, yes.
When the county first started on the, this is part of what's called the resource management system,
yeah.
and it's a component of the general plan.
Yeah.
They had a position that was 100% dedicated to it. As time goes by and other work efforts, some of that original individual's time started getting reallocated to other work efforts. So it's hard for me to believe that they've got that same level of dedication as they originally envisioned when they started the process, and they might have to grapple with that. Thankfully, the budgets are generally better than we were, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So hopefully this will work into their overall budget efforts and staffing efforts. And timeliness, if Director Bergman of the Planning Department needs to make sure to submit some specific budget requests, then maybe he needs to submit some budget specific budget requests.
It just seems like there's so much, so many resources being spent on water. And attorneys, yeah. I mean, it just seems like we have, there's so many different committees and boards, and it just seems like it's all about water. And maybe that's California. But anyway, Julie's gone. Do we have any more discussion?
We have an absent public to comment here.
I was going to call for public comment, but I don't see anybody.
Oh, no. Tony, do you want to make any public comment on this?
Then I'd entertain a motion. Unless we want to study this some more.
I just definitely want to piggyback on all these comments, and specifically to get everything in line with the resources and then planning as well, and be able to have more current data as opposed to now 13-year-old data that even with as the process would go to just initiate the effort, it could be 15-year-old data at that point in time. So, yeah, hopefully it'll be something that can get started soon. But yes, but I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the modified letter to provide comments to the Water Resource Advisory Committee and the County Board of Supervisors.
I'd second that.
I think this is just a straight up. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. And I was just going to add real quick that the resource summary report on parks is pretty depressing for Oceano. We're in the
underparked.
Underparked. Seriously, seriously underparked.
Oh, I wanted to mention to the board members too, in terms of distribution of agenda materials to you, because the resource, it's a public review draft of that, we decided to bind it to pull it out of, you know, the thicker part of the agenda to make the agenda look a little bit less daunting.
Yes.
It's a draft, though, so if you're not inclined to keep the draft document, Celia will certainly take it so we can recycle and reuse those binders.
Okay. I'm going to keep mine. I was surprised that, I know it's just a draft, but the information on the elementary schools,
yeah.
the school enrollments, just all the, it's just full of information that
and when we,
I should know when somebody asks me.
And so when a final report is prepared and distributed by the county, well, we'd be glad to replace the draft with the next version of the report for you as well.
Do we expect all the corrections to be there?
My understanding from Director Colwell is that there is many people in the county who have seen discrepancies in other areas as well. It might be a while before they get an update. They may not be going to the Board of Supervisors in the immediate future.
Each of the seven people at the last subcommittee meeting pointed out discrepancies within their district and generally.
Yeah.
Was a part of board recommendation or staff recommendation that if we want to keep this, that we should pull it out of the...
No. Go ahead. When you're done with the draft, then we'll...
To reuse them. we could reuse them.
Yes.
I'll just take one of these. These ones.
Well, I'm.
They are good. They're nice, heavy duty. They're nice, and you know we are frugal in this district about how much
we could recycle them. Yes.
I'd like to see them in blue or green. I don't like the color, but
we could do red for fire, blue for water, green for sewer,
brown for parks.
No, brown for sewer.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking the color of the pipes, right? Green are wastewater pipes, right, Tony?
Okay, shall we move on? 8C, consideration of an update on the emergency generator project and direction to staff.
Real briefly, what I try to portray out is some of the final alternatives that we need to be evaluating on the generator. On Wednesday, we had tentatively scheduled an electrician to go out to the yard and do some reconnaissance work out at the water yard, but we needed to reschedule that, so I don't have a verbal update. And what I guess tonight I just really want to do is portray how we're doing the evaluation. So we know that we have the need to develop an emergency generator for the fire station, the admin, and the sheriff station. And that cost is roughly in the range of $75,000 to $100,000, with about half the cost relating to the generator itself. To put a generator large enough at that location to also power up well number 8 moves it from about a 80-kilowatt generator to a 250 to 300-kilowatt generator. It doubles the price of the generator from about $45,000 to about $90,000, and it requires another $40,000 of control panels. So overall, it's a significant addition to that cost. Alternatively, we do have an emergency generator at the water yard. That kicks in the booster pumps right away. Those booster pumps only provide pressures to the system from the water in the tanks, but they don't power up the wells. So what we have is a situation where we don't have any emergency generator power right now for our wells. That's problematic with one of those domino situations. So what would the domino situation have to be? One is we'd have to lose flows from the county, because right now when we have water flows from the county, whether it's state water or Lopez water, they provide a lot of pressure, and of course they provide the flows. And because they're gravity flows, they're not dependent on energy. The county's got a storage tank up at the Lopez yard. And so we would have to have some non-power type of interruption of service from the county. We'd also have to lose power. But we'd have to lose power on two different grids because well number 8 is on a different grid than the water yard, which is wells 4 and 6. If those two things happened where we lost power on both grids and we lost the flow of county water, we still have water in the storage tank. The booster pumps would provide us pressure. Now, if we also had a fire at that point in time, then Tony starts getting really worried. Because losing Lopez or state water, losing power on both grids, and having a fire in the community means that we only have a couple hours worth of water in the tanks. If we don't have that fire, we could have maybe 15 hours worth of water in the tanks. So the bottom line, though, is we still want to address the situation of making sure that we get emergency power for the wells so that we can get wells back and pumping water at least within a couple of hours. So it's not necessary that we need to have the wells turned on automatically, but within a couple hours. So what we're doing is we have a good understanding of the additional cost to power up well number 8, and that's significant. $100,000, $125,000 is our rough cost estimate. The question is, could we put in an emergency permanent generator at the water yard that's far less expensive? And there's definitely the possibility because the pumps on wells 4 and 6
are much smaller than well number 8, so the size of the generator to kick it in is going to be less. And you can sequence it. You can turn on one pump for one well first and then the second well. And so that's why we want to get the electrician out there and to review it and start developing some rough budgetary cost estimates on that option. And then the third option is simply to have everything set up with outlets. They're not the little three-pronged 110-volt outlets we find in the buildings. They're five-pronged outlets that you want to make sure you don't get your finger stuck in when it gets turned on. But that's the other option, too, is to say, okay, it does take a cascading event before we're going to have problems. We do have water in storage. We can establish reverse 911 so that if we have an emergency, it goes out to the community and with the message of reduce your water usage. And then we just have to make sure that we've got, whether it's United Rental or any of the other rental companies, that we can access an emergency generator and get it plugged in within a couple hours. And that's all, you know, well within the realm of standard practices. I was part of the emergency response team for the San Simeon earthquake. And when I was at the operations center, the calls came in because a number of wells and facilities in North County had lost power. And at that point in time, what happened was the city of San Luis Obispo basically started moving generators up to North County. So even in an earthquake like that, we found that not the entire county had been affected. And the ability to move emergency generators around just between the different governmental operations helped in the San Simeon earthquake. So we do need to make sure to address emergency power for our wells. And so we're doing that final evaluation so that we can come back and make recommendations. My inclination is to believe that the recommendations will probably be something other than well number 8, that we would set up, you know, again, the outlet at well number 8 so that we can bring in an emergency generator when and if needed for well number 8. Part of the challenge of focusing on wells 4 and 6 is that they're much older wells. We already found out in trying to rehabilitate well number 5 that we just abandoned it instead because it couldn't be rehabilitated. But even then, having the permanent emergency generator up at the yard is important because that temporary generator, the portable generator that we have that first powers on the booster pumps, at some point in time, it needs to be brought down to the lift station in order to run the sewer lift station on Pier Avenue. And so that portable generator kind of has two tasks in front of it. And if we set up something more permanently at the yard, then that means that the portable generator is more easily dedicated to the sewer lift station. And that sort of summarizes the different items that we're evaluating. And again, our recommendations will come back when we come back to the board with the PFF public finance, public facilities fees recommendations, and then we'll provide some final recommendations on the emergency generator. And no action is sought, especially because, again, we had to reschedule the evaluation up at the yard.
You're seeing some of the PFF used on the generator issue?
Yes, not the water supply side, not for generator needs for the water system, but the generator needs for the fire station, which will also power back up this building and the sheriff's substation when needed.
As electricity went, how did we do Friday morning?
We had a few blips here in the office. In fact, I think it burned up one of our surge protectors. Our phones were down from Friday and when we came back on Tuesday. NORCAS got us back up and running today, and their observation was that one of our surge protectors got fried. So we saw the lights and everything flickering on Friday, and that is often a time where you get surges in the system.
Yeah, I was thinking about the well yard and the...
Yeah, everything... Yeah, we didn't...
Okay, just curious.
On the idea with potentially the permanent generator up there at the 4 and 6 well, if the cascading sort of events happened where we weren't getting flows, electricity was out, and there was a fire, would 4 and 6 meet the demand for that water?
It would. I don't know, Tony, if you... My suspicion is that we would still see the tanks coming down, but not draw down in a two-hour period. They would, we'd still get water into the tanks or into the system. By doing a reverse 9-1 and getting the community to, you know, basically don't take showers right now. If you don't need to flush the toilet, don't flush the toilet right now. Turn off your irrigation. And then it would also then, the idea is it would get us time, if necessary, to get that temporary generator over to well number 8. Again, we're talking about a scenario where we've got two grids down.
It increases 650 gallons a minute from the yard.
Okay.
So it definitely helps. Okay.
And basic fire flow standards has us at 2,000 gallons per minute.
You know, I calculated 3,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I think residential, we look at 2, and then commercial, you look at 3,000 gallons a minute, something like that. So,
it would help give more time, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably enough time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if, you know, if the big one hits...
there are scenarios where...
There are scenarios where it's not going to matter if we have a generator or not.
Right.
Because if we have a big earthquake... You know, everything else will go.
That's right. That's when Tony is running out and he's turning off valves in order to reduce system losses.
We had enough power outages. We had water lines break in Halcyon on Friday. When the trees went, the water lines went, and they had to close in the Halcyon water system.
Yeah.
They just, nobody had any water. Oh, well.
Was that from the tree roots that got the water pipes?
We aren't sure whether it's the roots that, well, in one place it was the roots that dug it up. The other one, they think it was just the shock of the 100-foot, 20-million-pound eucalyptus tree falling.
Mini earthquake.
It was. And all the selenium.
Yeah.
All the selenium in the water in Halcyon from the trees falling shook off the pipes on the inside and filled and plugged the water filters in several homes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
The filters were just black globs. Huh. It's amazing what can happen in 10 minutes. Anyway, let's move on. Anything else?
Nope, not for me.
Nope. I don't see any utility items, any hearing items. Received written communications. I think we received the stuff from okay, future agenda items, and then we'll go into closed session.
So future agenda items, I've the district policies aren't going to be immediate. I had my first meeting with SEIU regarding the third year reopener for health benefits that's included in the existing MOU and for personnel policy updates. So obviously don't have anything to speak on that today other than the idea that I've got plenty of work. The protocol and meet and confer is that we'll be going through the details of personnel policy updates with the union before coming into a public session. And so even as we have started working on them, they won't make them to your board's public agenda at any time in the near future. But they are going. The SSMP audit, we're still going to try to target for March. We'll see how we do on that. Good news is that KC is really taking the leadership role on that, and I'll be working with KC directly on the SSMP audit. The professional services proposals, I need to really start pushing on that next week. Getting proposals back from firms, though, I'm not going to anticipate that those are going to be on your board's agenda. Most likely it would be early April. And then we've already talked about the Zone 3 budget and the Quarter 3 budget review, which will be in early April. And I know there's all those other things that pop up as well. Need to come back again with the public facilities fee items and the authorization to go out to bid on the generator project. So those will continue to be high priorities.
Okay. We'll move on to closed session.
I'll make a note for the record that there is no public for public comment on the closed session.
Yes.
So the board will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus the City of Santa Maria.